Now they were going downhill, and the walls of tightly packed paper had given way to ramparts of filing cabinets, jumbles of adding machines, and piles of computer gear. It was like running through some nightmarish Radio Shack warehouse. For almost a full minute, the wall flowing past on Jake's left appeared to be constructed solely of either TV sets or carelessly stacked video display terminals. They stared at him like the glazed eyes of dead men. And as the pavement beneath their feet continued to descend, Jake realized that they were in a tunnel. The strip of cloudy sky overhead narrowed to a band, the band narrowed to a ribbon, and the ribbon became a thread. They were in a gloomy netherworld, scurrying like rats through a gigantic trash midden. What if it all comes down on us? Jake wondered. But in his current state of aching exhaustion, this possibility did not frighten him much. If the roof fell in, he would at least be able to rest. Gasher drove him as a farmer would a mule, striking his left shoulder to indicate a left turn and his right to indicate a right turn. When the course was straight on, he thumped Jake on the back of the head. Jake tried to dodge a jutting pipe and didn't quite succeed. It whacked into one hip and sent him flailing across the narrow passage toward a snarl of glass and jagged boards. Gasher caught him and shoved him forward again.
Run, you clumsy squint! Can't you run? If it wasn't for the TikTok man, I'd bugger you right here and cut your throat while I did it. So I would.
Jake ran in a red daze where there was only pain and the frequent thud of Gasher's fists coming down on his shoulders or the back of his head. At last, when he was sure he could run no longer, Gasher grabbed him by the neck and yanked him to a stop so fiercely that Jake crashed into him with a strangled squawk.
"Here's a tricky little bit," Gasher panted jovially. "Look straight ahead and you'll see two wires what cross in an X low to the ground. Do you see 'em?"
At first, Jake didn't. It was very gloomy here. Heaps of huge copper kettles were piled up to the left, and to the right were stacks of steel tanks that looked like scuba diving gear. Jake thought he could turn these latter into an avalanche with one strong breath. He swiped his forearm across his eyes, brushing away tangles of hair, and tried not to think about how he'd look with about 16 tons of those tanks piled on top of him. He squinted in the direction Gasher was pointing. Yes, he could make out, barely, two thin silvery lines that looked like guitar or banjo strings. They came down from opposite sides of the passageway and crossed about 2 feet above the pavement.
"Crawl under, dear heart, and be ever so careful, for if you so much as twang one of those wires, half the steel and cement puke in the city'll come down on your dear little head. Mine, too, although I doubt if that'd disturb you much, would it? Now crawl."
Jake shrugged out of his pack, lay down, and pushed it through the gap ahead of him. And as he eased his way under the thin, taut wires, he discovered that he wanted to live a little longer after all. It seemed that he could actually feel all those tons of carefully balanced junk waiting to come down on him. "These wires are probably holding a couple of carefully chosen keystones in place," he thought. "If one of them breaks, ashes, ashes, we all fall down." His back brushed one of the wires, and high overhead something creaked.
"Careful, Collie," Gasher almost moaned. "Be also careful."
Jake pushed himself beneath the crisscrossing wires using his feet and his elbows. His stinking, sweat-clogged hair fell in his eyes again, but he did not dare brush it away.
"You're clear,"
Gasher grunted at last, and slipped beneath the trip wires himself with the ease of long practice. He stood up and snatched Jake's pack before Jake could reshoulder it.
"What's in here, Collie?"
he asked, undoing the straps and peering in.
"Got any treats for your old pal? For the Gasher man loves his treaties, so he does."
"There's nothing in there," but Gasher's hand flashed out and rocked Jake's head back with a hard slap that sent a fresh spray of bloody froth flying from the boy's nose.
"What did you do that for?" Jake cried, hurt and outraged. "For telling me what my own beshitted eyes can see,"
Gasher yelled, and cast Jake's pack aside. He bared his remaining teeth at the boy in a dangerous, terrible grin.
"And for almost bringing the whole beshitted works down on us."
He paused, then added in a quieter voice,
"And because I felt like it, I must admit that. Your stupid sheep's face puts me very much in a slapping temper, so it does."
The grin widened, revealing his oozing whitish gums, a sight Jake could have done without.
If your hard case friend follows us this far, he'll have a surprise when he runs into those wires, won't he?
Gasher looked up, still grinning.
There's a city bus balanced up there someplace, as I remember.
Jake began to weep, tired, hopeless tears that cut through the dirt on his cheeks in narrow channels. Gasher raised an open, threatening hand.
Get moving, Cully, before I start crying myself. For a wary, sentimental feller is your old pal, so he is. And when he starts to grieve and mourn, a little slapping is the only thing to put a smile on his face again. Run!
They ran. Gasher chose pathways leading deeper into the smelly, creaking maze, seemingly at random, indicating his choices with hard wax to the shoulders. At some point, the sound of the drums began. It seemed to come from everywhere and nowhere, and for Jake, it was the final straw. He gave up hope and thought alike, and allowed himself to descend wholly into the nightmare. 17. Roland halted in front of the barricade, which choked the street from side to side and top to bottom. Unlike Jake, he had no hopes of emerging into the open on the other side. The buildings lying east of this point would be sentry-occupied islands emerging from an inland sea of trash, tools, artifacts, and booby traps, he had no doubt. Some of these leavings undoubtedly still remained where they had fallen 500 or 700 or 1,000 years ago. But Roland thought most of it had been dragged here by the Greys a piece at a time. The eastern portion of Ludd had become, in effect, the castle of the Greys, and Roland was now standing outside its wall. He walked forward slowly and saw the mouth of a passageway half hidden behind a ragged cement boulder. There were footprints in the powdery dust, two sets, one big, one small. Roland started to get up, looked again, and squatted on his hunkers once more. Not two sets, but three, the third marking the paws of a small animal. "Oi?" Roland called softly. For a moment there was no response, and then a single soft bark came from the shadows. Roland stepped into the passageway and saw gold-ringed eyes peering at him from around the first crooked corner. Roland trotted down to the bumbler. Oi, who still didn't like to come really close to anyone but Jake, backed up a step and then held his ground, looking anxiously up at the gunslinger. "Do you want to help me?" Roland asked. He could feel the dry, red curtain that was battle fever at the edge of his consciousness, but this was not the time for it. The time would come, but for now he must not allow himself that inexpressible relief. "Help me find Jake?" "Jake!" Oi barked, still watching Roland with his anxious eyes. "Go on, then. Find him." Oi turned away at once and ran rapidly down the alley, nose skimming the ground. Roland followed, his eyes only occasionally flicking up to glance at Oi. Mostly he kept his gaze fixed on the ancient pavement, looking for sign.